ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. Two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 173 of the report. And right now, man, we rocking out to some old ass intro, man. Come inside, rock with your boy. Yes, indeed, man. We are chilling out here on this Sunday afternoon, man. Chilling out with some old-ass intro. Getting ready to get into episode 173 of the report, man. And, yeah, man, this is some cool shit, man. I'm feeling nostalgic, man. Of course, I get like this every now and again, man. I start feeling nostalgic. I start watching TV and shit. And I'd be like, man, I remember when this was popping off. I remember when that was hot. You know what I'm saying? I'm in that kind of mode right now, man. Like, R.I.P. to the R&B group, man. Like, we haven't seen R&B groups in a long time. And I think the last R&B group, so to speak, might have been, what, Pretty Ricky? You know what I mean? Like, you don't see the R&B groups hot. They ain't popping no more, man. They ain't popping. And even the R&B casters out here now, they trying to be R&B rappers. It's not the same, man. The game ain't the same. That's not to say that the music out here is totally trash. Because I get it, man. You know, I don't want to sound like the old head, you know, that old-ass uncle who always shitting on the stuff that all the kids like now. But I'm just saying, man, the R&B group is dead, man. Like, I was sitting up watching, what was it? I was watching Unsung, man. And they did an episode on Jagged Edge. And I was tripping out. I'm like, yo, man, I grew up. Like, it's funny, right? Because when Unsung first came out, as a matter of fact, let me cut this off. When Unsung first came out, man, Unsung was profiling a lot of groups from like that were like beyond my time, or like, you know, they were a little bit older than like the groups or the artists that I could really appreciate, right? So you start getting groups like the OJs and the Spinners and the Temptations and, you know, stuff like that. Like they were doing like, you know, some of those older groups, some of those artists who, you know, were a little bit before what, you know, the time that I could really appreciate the music, right? You know, he had an episode on a Sylvester. They even did an episode on my grandfather once. And so, like, yeah, it's just kind of weird now to, like, I'm starting to see episodes where, like, it's people that we kind of grew up with, right? That's how you let that's how you know you're getting old, man. Because, like, all of the people that you kind of grew up with, the music that you like, are starting to show up on all these oldie stations. And the artists are showing up on, like, Unsung and Behind the Music and shit like that, right? So, like, I was watching, one day I just sat down, I was watching Unsung. They had Dave Hollister was on Unsung. They had Donnell Jones, who was on Unsung. They had Jagged Edge on Unsung. It's like, man, I remember, like, kind of coming up and listening to these cats on the radio and, like, seeing how their careers have kind of, like, gone to the wayside, so to speak. But I was thinking about, you know, the fact that, like, yo, R&B groups are kind of, like, just gone. Like, it's really, like, very rarely do you see, like, a really good R&B group anymore. Unless, of course, it's an old school group who's still touring and doing shows at, like, maybe, like, your local casino or some shit like that, right? Because there really aren't any, you know, there aren't any more R&B groups, man. They got boy bands. Those aren't the same. Those really aren't the same. So, yeah, man, shout out to the members of Intro. I think the lead singer, I know the lead singer has passed on due to AIDS complications, man. So, yeah, man. I felt like that was apropos. I was in a real chill mode. So I was like, you know what? Let me go back. I'm going to listen to some old ass Intro. Yeah. So that's what's going on, man. That's what's going on. But yeah, man. This is episode number 173. And of course, before we get started and everything, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can go ahead and hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll play those messages on the show and respond right here as well. You can also email me at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails, man. And of course, I'll read those emails and respond to you right here on the show live as well. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. We can chop it up throughout the week when I ain't busy as shit like I've been this week. Like the show. I'm sorry, subscribe to the show on Crowdcast. You can watch these shows live on crowdcast.io. Go ahead and subscribe to the show and get alerted when we go live, man. Watch the shows live, participate in the chat room, and it also allows you to know, like, yo, you can actually call the show live while we're doing it, man. So go ahead and subscribe to crowdcast.io or subscribe to the Span Report on Crowdcast, and you can be a part of the show as we're doing this as well, man. Go to www.thespanreport.com for all of your Span Report needs. Vote in the polls. Leave comments. All of that. Watch the shows later. Like, you can watch the replays on the shows, man. All of that stuff is available there at thespanreport.com. And I would very much appreciate it if you guys give me a 5-star review on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio, man. Those get read on the show. They really will. Right? Only the 5-star ones, right? Only, like, you can give whatever review you want, but the 5-star ones are the ones that are going to get read here on the show, man. Shout out to Rod and Karen for that. I did all right. I already did that. Okay. So, yeah. That's everything. We done ran through the business. So, yeah, man. Let me get into this show. So, you guys didn't get a show Thursday. And partially because, like, yo, I was tired, man. Like, real talk, the job been kicking my ass as of late. We've been really busy, man. As a matter of fact, if you guys are watching this live, man, you can see I got, like, this little mark underneath my eye. And that was totally my dumbass fault, right? So I was, like, using a saw on a piece of metal pipe. And, you know, sometimes shards kind of fly everywhere. And I didn't have my safety glasses on. And I was lucky enough to where it didn't actually project that metal shard directly into my eye. You know, that could have been a real big thing. I was lucky to not have this go a little bit further up. And your man Span probably could have, like, been blind in his right eye. Right. So wear your fucking safety glasses, man. If you're in a job where, like, you have, you know, things flying and, you know, you got things flying in the air, man, it requires you to wear a safety glass or a hard hat or whatever the fuck, man, wear your shit. You know what I'm saying? Wear your shit. There's really no excuse not to. And I lucked up. I lucked up. So yeah, man, I had, you know, that kind of go on. But yo, not only that, man, we've been like, you know, it's the summer months, so it's really busy for us. And I've been working my ass off. So Thursday, man, like I was beat. And I just felt like, yo, man, like, not only that, I couldn't really pay attention to what was going on in the news, man. Like, I wouldn't even listen to the podcast or nothing while I was at work because I was just, like, swamped. So, you know, that's part of the reason why you guys didn't get a show Thursday. But hopefully it won't be like that this week, right? Because we're doing this show today, and hopefully we're going to have another show come in Thursday. Try to keep it consistent, man, real talk. But, yeah, man, outside of that, let's just get into the show, man. Let's get into the news, man. All of the excuses out of the fucking way. All of the business out of the way. All of that stuff. Let's just get into the news, man. So, as a matter of fact, let's do this. Let's get into the news. This is a really long sound. I didn't realize how long that shit was. Right? But yeah, man, we're getting into the news. So one of the first things that we want to talk about here tonight, man, is the fact that Donald Trump has decided that he wants to ban transgender people from actually serving in the military. Yeah. It's really fucking stupid. Crazy to me too, right? Donald Trump is saying that he doesn't want transgender people participating in any military action whatsoever, right? So as a matter of fact, I could have swore, of course, I had this pulled up, and I do not. So let me go back to my Facebook and see where I had this story. You know what? I didn't save the story, but I do know what the hell's going on. So here's the thing. Donald Trump went out and he announced on Twitter that he was banning the participation of transgender people from all branches of military service. Right. So it was one of those things where it's another rollback of one of the things that President Barack Obama had implemented to where transgender people were able to serve in the military. Now, here's the thing. And I think, like, for Donald Trump, man, it's basically like his whole presidency is basically like an attempt to roll back Obama. Like, they want to try to erase Obama from the history books. They want to erase everything that Obama was able to accomplish. This is part of the reason why you're starting to see so much pushback. Well, not starting to see, but it's been like pushback on the quote unquote Obamacare. Where the Republicans are trying to repeal Obamacare and Donald Trump is trying to pressure Republicans into repealing Obamacare and not actually trying to fix what's wrong with quote unquote Obamacare, what is really called the Affordable Care Act. And it's funny because there's a lot of people who decide, like, you know, Republicans are very cynical and they're very good at this shit, right? So they tell people, they call this stuff Obamacare. It's really called the Affordable Care Act. And there's a lot of people who voted or don't like the Obamacare because it's named Obamacare. They like the Affordable Care Act. There have been times where like I think Jimmy Kimmel has done this, maybe even Jimmy Fallon or something like that, where they talk to people on the street and they ask them the difference between Obamacare and an Affordable Care Act. And these people have absolutely no fucking clue that they are the exact same thing. Only the fact that they don't like President Barack Obama. Right? So, you know, you got the Republicans who failed in their effort, John McCain, and that's something entirely different that I kind of want to get into, but not right now. But John McCain helped torpedo their recent attempt to repeal Obamacare, to do a skinny repeal of Obamacare. And as part of an attempt for Trump to get funding for this wall that he's trying to build, Donald Trump decided that he was going to bar transsexuals or transgender people from participating in the military. Now, part of the reason is this. There's a lot of conservative Republicans, a lot of conservative congressmen and senators who, as part of their, as part of their like, you know, conditions as to whether or not they're going to try to fund that wall, they said, well, there's this Obamacare, not Obamacare thing. There's this policy that Obama tried to push through that allows transgender people to serve in the military. And this is a cost that we don't want to incur because we don't believe that the government should be paying for transition services for transgender people, right? And so as a way to appease those folks and to get funding for the wall that Trump is trying to build, he decides to throw transgender people under the bus and say that they can no longer serve within the military. Now, one of the things that's wrong with that is that they're already transgender people in the military. Another thing that's wrong with that is the cost that they that he used as a burden, right? Because Trump tried to say that transgender people were a burden to the Pentagon. They were a burden to the armed services as to how much it costs for them to receive hormonal treatment, to receive maybe even transition surgery or what have you, that they would be a burden onto the military. And that is why he decided that they aren't worthy of military service. Now, the actual cost of the very minimal number of transgender people who want to, who are actively serving in the military, and the cost of their incurring in the military at this moment is anywhere between $4.2 million and $5.6 million a year. Okay? A year. It costs less to secure Donald Trump's family in Trump Tower than it does for the accommodations needed for transgender service people. It costs less. As a matter of fact, it also costs less the amount of, than the amount of money that people are spending, than the government is spending on conditions like erectile dysfunction. Right? So if you are in the if you're currently in the military, man, and your dick ain't working the way you wish you it should be, or the way in which you wished it was, or the way in which it used to, you can get Viagra or Levitra or Cialis, and the military is going to pay for it to the tune of, what is it? $80 million. $80 million. So the fact that there are costs associated with being a man with a dick that isn't functioning right, and the cost of being a transgender person just trying to exist in the world and also serve your country, yo, it costs a hell of a lot less money to help transgender people maintain who they are and also serve the country, right? And so it's an interesting thing, man. With Donald Trump, he's never served in the military, right? And I've got my misgivings about, like, you know, some of the things with the military and what have you, but I'm not knocking anybody who decides that that's something that they want to do. But Donald Trump, as someone who during the Vietnam War got plenty of fucking deferments to prevent him from actually going to serve in the war, what it really was is like, yo, rich people found a way to get the fuck up out of those situations, right? If you had money, if you had resources, you didn't have to go. It was a lot of time, it was poor people who were going off and fighting in these wars, man. Donald Trump benefited from the fact that his father had means, and the fact that, yo, like, he had means and he had influence, and so Donald Trump didn't have to serve in the military. It's ironic that somebody who didn't even have the guts to go do what they were, like, what other folks had to go do, had no means of getting out of it, and Donald Trump is going to now tell people that they can't serve in the military, right? And so, like, all this week, man, I'm watching television, man. Like, there was this, they do this thing here in Detroit, man. It's called Let It Rip on Channel 2. And they had these, they had this service member who had lost a limb and stuff. And they had another Republican dude who was also a service member or what have you. And they're both talking about the reasons why transgender people should not be allowed to serve in the military. They're talking about regiment preparedness, and they're talking about unit cohesion and all these things. And the fact of the matter remains is that this is, the fact of the matter is this: transgender people have been serving in the military, and they are currently serving in the military right now. So these arguments are fucking bogus. These arguments are bullshit. And it harkens back to the whole thing about transgender people using the restroom that they identify with, right? Republicans rolled that issue to a large degree to legislative wins, man, like to electoral wins, where like now all of a sudden people are scared of transgender people going to the bathroom when, yo, it was never an issue before, and they were already using the bathrooms that they already identify with. They were already using these bathrooms. And this is just another fucking thing added to the equation. Well, a president of the United States seeks to further marginalize a marginalized group already, and he allows for other people who follow his ass, who think that what he says is legitimate and is coming from the president of the fucking United States, who think that this is an okay thing to do to further marginalize these people. And so, It's weird, man, like kind of watching this shit play out and watching people who don't necessarily fuck with Trump kind of co-sign some of this bullshit, right? And I guess that kind of goes into that clock is right twice a day to some people when it comes to issues like this, because there's a lot of people who don't fuck with Trump who believe that, yo, transgender people are fucked up and something's wrong with them. There's a whole lot of people who think that. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, another thing that was very interesting about this entire thing was the fact that Donald Trump was he did this around the same time. I think it was an anniversary that came up where Harry Truman desegregated the armed forces and allowed people of color to join the armed forces. Right now, here's another thing, too, about this. A lot of the same arguments get recycled with marginalized people in this country. They get recycled. And I know a lot of even talking about, like, say for instance, that Curtis motherfucker who wrote into the show and who's writing in the Facebook group and all these other things, that he was talking about me getting sidetracked with the LGBTQ community and its connection with black people or whatever else, right? But the thing of it is like the rhetoric is the same no matter which marginalized group you choose, right? So you got the same argument. So like before, when black soldiers, they didn't think that black soldiers were actually willing to fight, where black soldiers were aching at the bit to prove themselves that they were able to fight, that they were. And it, not only that, they come home and people weren't even respecting the service. People who didn't even fucking go to the war were disrespecting black people who went to the war fighting for their right to be assholes. Right? In much the same way that these transgender people are fighting for the right to defend their country, and they come back home to a population of people who don't respect them, don't respect their existence, and treat them like shit. It takes a strong motherfucker to do that, man. I don't have that in me. I don't love these motherfuckers like that. I don't love this country that much to that point where I feel like I have to go fight to defend this motherfucker with some of the shit that my people have gone through. I mean, but I'm not knocking anybody who feels like they should. People make their own, you know, people have to make their decisions. They have to make their own way in the world. But it takes a strong motherfucker to do that. And so, yeah, man, Donald Trump goes out here. He does this bullshit and it emboldens so many other people to come out and think that this shit is legitimate. They think this is okay. This is all right thing to do to further marginalize an already marginalized group of people. And, yeah, man, fuck Donald Trump for that, man. Real talk. But there's other news that we got going on this week, man. There's another story that we've already talked about. As a matter of fact, I believe we talked about this on the last show. And this story is coming out of Baltimore. Remember, we talked about the officers in Baltimore, or the officer in Baltimore who was caught on his body cam planting drugs in a crime scene to frame a suspect, right? So we got an update to that story. As a matter of fact, 34 cases that were pending... 34 cases that were pending in the Baltimore courts involving this officer have been thrown out of court after the release of this video, right? So I'm going to read this story here out of the CBS News. It says 34 criminal cases have been thrown out as authorities investigate three Baltimore police officers accused of planting evidence at crime scenes, officials announced Friday night. Approximately 123 cases are under review after body camera footage appeared to show an officer planting illicit drugs at a crime scene in January, said Marilyn Mosby, Baltimore state attorney. Mosby said that her office has dismissed or will dismiss cases that solely relied on the officer's credibility. Where those officers, where these officers are material and necessary witnesses, we are dismissing those cases which rely exclusively on the credibility of those officers. 77 cases are still under review, while 12 other cases are moving forward, Mosby said. Now, you know, the interesting thing about this is that Marilyn Mosby has been catching hell for even pursuing police officers in Baltimore after what happened with Freddie Gray. And a lot of these police officers are trying to sue Marilyn Mosby for simply doing her fucking job and prosecuting the police. Like, here's the thing, like, police accountability is really what the community is asking for, especially the black community. They're asking for accountability when they fuck up. Now, ironically, a lot of those police officers don't really have a hell of a lot to say about this particular situation, as they never really do. You know what I'm saying? But when it comes, he was caught red-handed. And this is what I was saying before. It's like, yo, Blue Lives Matter aren't going to be talking about the need for these officers to be fired because they were crooked. They're just talking about them being fired because they got caught being crooked, right? So Marilyn Mosby, even after all the shit that she's taken for even pursuing cases against the officers who helped facilitate the death of Freddie Gray, she's still on the game, man. She's still on the job and holding these police officers accountable. And this is what the community needs. The police need to be held accountable when they're fucking up within the communities, man. And that's all Black Lives Matter. And people who are in the fight for Black Lives are asking for accountability for those who are charged with protecting the fucking community, right? So Mosby said that her office has dismissed or will dismiss. I read that part already. 77 cases are still under review, while 12 other cases are moving forward. As I stated before, it is incumbent upon us as prosecutors to be the ministers of justice and do what's right in the pursuit of justice over convictions, while simultaneously prioritizing public safety, she said. Chief Counsel Antonio Gayoa said that the cases dropped were felony drug and freestanding firearms cases. Now, you know, here's the thing. Here's the catch 22 in this whole thing. Some of these people who have gotten their cases thrown out might have very well been fucking guilty. Right? Some of them may have very well been like, yo, like they deserve to be locked up. But because of the credibility of these officers being complete shit, and because these officers are going about their business in totally crooked fucking ways, you let the criminals who need to be locked up free. You let them free because you can't do your fucking job in the way in which it should be done. Your credibility is shot, and it calls into question every fucking thing you've done, even if what you probably done was the right thing at some point in time. Right? Now, if these guys who were, you know, who may have very well been guilty and been let go, recommit, you know, like commit another crime, then, you know, that is yet another black eye on the police department for not doing what the fuck they were supposed to do. Not doing what you were supposed to do. You are still failing in your job to protect the public. Still failing at that, right? So it says, following the discovery of the 90-second video, one officer was suspended and two others were placed on desk duty while the Office of Professional Responsibility completes its investigation. At a news conference Wednesday, Baltimore Police Department Commissioner Kevin Davis said he wasn't concerned that the video could jeopardize other cases. He must be living in a motherfucking under a rock or some shit, because it could. Says this is a serious allegation of police misconduct, Davis said. There's nothing that deteriorates the trust of any community more than thinking for more than 1 second that uniformed police officers and police officers in general will plant evidence of crimes on citizens. Eric Rich, whose son was arrested by one of the officers, told CBS Baltimore that his son spent several months in jail before Maryland prosecutors dismissed the charges. There are lots of cases and you have to and you have a lot of innocent people who got locked up, he said. So what is the state going to do about this? Is they going to reward the people that they got locked up for nothing? Now, that's another thing, too. So now you open yourself up for a lot of lawsuits, you know, for people who were locked up wrongfully behind the evidence maybe planted by this officer. And now you the cost has gone up for the city, for the city's insurance companies who have to pay these wrongful imprisonment, you know, cases or whatever. I forget exactly. I don't know exactly what they're called. But when a person is wrongfully incarcerated and now you have to compensate these people for the time that you've taken away from their life for crimes that they did not commit, for crimes that they will not be convicted for. They were held for however length of time and you've taken this time, you've taken possibly the jobs away from them. Some of these people maybe have been gainfully employed, and now they've lost their jobs because of this, and they can't take care of their families because of this. And so now the cost has gone up exponentially because you didn't do the fucking job the way it was supposed to be done. So yeah, man, no sympathy whatsoever for these cops. And it's a systemic issue that needs to be addressed. And this is what we talk about when we talk about Black Lives Mattering, man. When we talk about the accountability that the police need to be held under when they do wrong in the community. And much the same way that people talk about Black people taking accountability for their own actions, especially when they want to talk about Chicago, they want to talk about Black on Black crime and all these other things. Hey, when the police fuck up, what is the accountability they go under? What happens to them? You know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, that's been going on. Real talk. Some other shit in the news, right? So we've been talking about R. Kelly lately, again. And R. Kelly is, he's released a statement like on TMZ, like he did this one video, this real choppy ass video. You would think he would have a better phone with the amount of money that this motherfucker has, but whatever. And he's denying the allegations of him having a harem and all these other things. But one of the things that have happened over the course of these last couple of weeks since that news has broken was the fact that he's retained Monique Pressley as one of his lawyers. Oh shit. Yeah, man, Monique Pressley. For those of you who are familiar, Monique Pressley was also one of Bill Cosby's attorneys during his trial, or leading up to his trial. She actually stepped off of his case before it actually went to trial, right? But Monique Pressley has decided that she's going to take up the cause of R. Kelly, right? So we're going to read this story. It says, last week, allegations started to spread that R. Kelly allegedly has a group of women in a sex cult. The news quickly expanded and caused the singer to trend on social media. Following the allegations, one of the women in the alleged cult spoke out, reassuring that the rumors were false. Her family responded and claimed that the rumors were very much true. According to the Daily Mail, R. Kelly is now reportedly added Bill Cosby's former lawyer, Monique Pressley, to his defense team. Pressley helped defend Cosby as he faced charges of sexual assault before stepping down from his legal team last August. Pressley refused to release a comment on the situation. Last week, Linda Minch, another attorney for R. Kelly, released a statement on his behalf in regards to the allegations. The statement reads, Mr. Robert Kelly is both alarmed and disturbed at the recent revelations attributed to him. Mr. Kelly unequivocally denies such allegations and will work diligently and forcefully to pursue his accusers and clear his name. All right, so here's the thing, man, and I've gotten to some discussions with some folks about this entire thing, man. Here's with Monique Pressley, man. I'm of the mindset of like, yo, yeah, fuck you, right? Fuck you. And here's the thing, and the reason why, like, you know, I've talked to some people who are lawyers and stuff, and they were like, yo, man, you don't get to pick your cases, man. Like, you know, sometimes the clients choose you and all these other things. It's like, yo, Monique Pressley is of the profile of she's at a profile where she can pick which cases she's willing to take on, right? Let's not make no mistakes about this, man. Monique Pressley got hell of a profile for defending Bill Cosby in such a public way. She was the face of the Bill Cosby defense for a while. She was going on TV One. She was going on CNN and MSNBC. She was going on all these media outlets with her defense of Bill Cosby, right? She was the spokesperson pretty much for the defense of Bill Cosby. She wasn't defending him in the courtroom. She was defending him in the court of public opinion, so to speak, right? And so there's this thing where you start to see a pattern of, okay, she took this case where, you know, Bill Cosby is accused of drugging and taking sexual advantage of over 50 some odd women, right? And then you have another case where we have a known pedophile. I don't give a fuck, like, you know, you say what you want about the convictions and all this other shit. We got a known pedophile in R. Kelly, and she decides that she's going to take up his cause as well. And then after a while, it's like, yo, man, yeah, you kind of not shit. Because these are two cases where you could have said, nah, I ain't getting involved in no shit like that. Now, I get it. There are people who, like, people will say that, yo, it is their right to a defense, right? And that is their right. It is their right to a defense. However, does one really need to be the defense attorney or the public face of the defense of both Bill Cosby and R. Kelly when both of these motherfuckers have histories of doing foul shit? And why would one want their name associated with defending that? Unless, of course, you don't really believe they did it. And at this point, it's like, yeah, your credibility is a little shot with that, with a lot of folks too. Right? Now, I get it. She's a very effective mouthpiece. Like, there were folks who were like, yo, man, I don't really fuck with Bill Cosby, but this lawyer, man, shit, man, she bad than a motherfucker, boy. Like, she really got me thinking, like, maybe he didn't do it, right? It's a whole lot of motherfuckers who were out there talking that same shit with Bill Cosby last year. Like, maybe he didn't do it, man. Like, she bringing in reasonable doubt to me, dog. And so, it's like, yeah, you chose to take these cases on. Nobody made you take these cases on. You could have turned down, you know, the money or the profile for R. Kelly. Like, you've already gotten the money and the profile from Bill Cosby. But to continue to take cases like this, where these dudes have histories of assaulting young women or taking advantage of young women, and you putting your face in and aligning your name and your face and your brand with these motherfuckers. Like, yeah, I'm of the mind of fuck Monique Presley in much the same way as fuck Bill Cosby and fuck R. Kelly. Right? That's just me. Feel about it however you will, but that's how we feel about that shit here at the Spearing Report, man. But yeah, man, Monique Presley being a part of the defense team for R. Kelly, man, yeah, she has a habit of defending trash, right? And we're going to get into some of that a little bit later on in the show, right? So, yeah, that is the news, man, real talk. But it is now time for our What in Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say Blue
Blazes? All right, so today in our What in Blue Blazes segment, we're going to talk about tiny houses, right? Now, the thing is, man, like, tiny houses, I kind of blame HGTV for this shit, right? So, like, HGTV, they were doing these shows, they do the House Hunter shows, and then, like, they would have, like, House Hunters International, and then House Hunters Tiny Houses, and all these other stuff, and they had these pretentious motherfuckers get on here and talk about, well, you know, I don't really need this space, and, you know, it costs a whole hell of a lot less money than an actual home, and it makes me live more efficiently, and what's another one? It shortens my carbon footprint. Like, all these things, man. Like, you would look at these houses and they would be like fucking closets in a normal house. And it's like, you got the bed, you know, the bed. There is no bedroom. There's a bed on a loft, so to speak, that sits over like someone's dining room. Then you come downstairs. Like, it's very small. It's like, it's a trailer. Sometimes smaller than a trailer, right? And so HGTV kind of promoted these tiny houses, and they kind of got like really big, right? But apparently folks is out here and they are a little bit mad. You know what, not even so much mad, they're disappointed and they're regretting their purchase of a tiny house. Right? So I'm gonna read this story. This comes out of delish.com. And it says, between their efficient organization and streamlined design, tiny houses have totally taken over on TV and social media in the past few years. The idea of scaling back on belongings as well as mortgage payments is certainly appealing, but how many people could or would be able to actually live in 400 square feet? Not many, according to a recent report by Trulia. The online real estate resource polled more than 2,264 U.S. adults about what they wish they had done differently with their current housing. A whopping 44% of participants had housing regrets, and the biggest regret among homeowners had to do with size. 1 in 3 homeowners said they wish they had chosen a larger home, compared to only 9% who wished they had downsized. There has been plenty of criticism around tiny living. Deep inside the expensive custom closets and under the new age Murphy beds, the petite propaganda has hidden some unseemly truths about how the other half lives, Gene Tippett penned in the personal essay for the New York Times. No one writes about the little white lies that help sell this new, very small American dream. As Tippett points out, the items in her microhome, in which she lives out of financial necessity, seems much more imposing than they would in the larger space, and they get much more wear and tear, which accelerates the rate at which she must replace them. Plus, building a tiny home comes with a host of challenges, including but not limited to complying with business codes and securing a loan. Still, others swear by the benefit of tiny homes. They require less money and fewer materials and encourage living simply and wasting less. The number of current homeowners aching for extra space is actually down 1% from the Trulia 2013 survey, so perhaps the recent tiny home and movement has convinced a few converts. Still, 33% is a pretty big chunk. Now, I'll say this. It takes a very disciplined person, maybe, to live in a tiny home. It takes a very special person to live in a tiny home. Everything is personal, right? Right? So everybody has, like, you know, what you eat don't make me shit, right? But like the tiny home, like the it always just seemed counterproductive. Like, people have to sell off all their shit to move into these little bitty spaces, right? And you can never have folks over. I guess, like, you know, maybe folks aren't into having folks over, right? You can't really have folks over. More than one or two people is probably too many people in that tiny home. I never got the appeal. Like, I just always felt like, yo, this is, I just felt like it was some sort of niche, like HGTV, that's kind of pushed on folks, and now, like, it's like everything is kind of like cool with a tiny home, in much the same way that, like, I'm seeing a whole lot of folks after watching What the Health start talking about they're being vegans now. Like, all of a sudden, I've been seeing this shit a lot on my timeline. Like, everybody's starting to turn vegan after watching What the Health, and it's one of those things, man. It's like, yo, this is what's hot in the streets right now to a small segment of people, right? And, like, again, I'm biased. I am biased. I hate house hunters. I hate the people that go on house hunters. A lot of the shit on house hunters is bullshit. And I've always felt like it was. And maybe this tiny home thing has, like, the HGTV. I blame HGTV for turning me sour on the tiny home, maybe. Right? So, yeah, man, it's saying that folks are they're actually regretting getting these tiny homes, man. Real talk. I'm saying no shit, though. I could have seen that a mile away. I could have seen that coming. Like, yo, man, after a while, man, of, like, not being able to really get comfortable in that bed, you might not like this home for too much longer. But yeah, man, that's the thing. Another thing that's going on, man. Stupidity is spreading. Stupidity is spreading. And so, why do I say that, right? So we got this story, man. Matter of fact, let me see if I can pull this up. Did I already save this? Apparently I did not save this here. So let me go to my Facebook and pull this up. All right. So the story here is, there's a teacher, a middle school teacher, who's having trouble convincing their students that the world is round because these kids value the opinion of Kyrie Irving more than the teacher who's actually teaching them science. You know what? Better yet.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Yeah, man. So check this out, man. Let me pull this story up. I still haven't found it. I post a lot of shit on Facebook. Where is it? And I'm still scrolling. Where did I do with it? It's on here somewhere. My apologies, folks. Damn it, where is it? Okay. VaporMax. I still don't see it. Jesus, man. Nope, still don't see it. Okay, man, where is it? Goddamn. Nope, still don't see it. Still don't fucking see it. Okay, so here's what we're gonna do. I'll look it up. because I thought I had it, but apparently I do not. Okay, here we go. Here we go. This is actually coming out of the Washington Post. I finally found this damn story, right? It says that Kyrie Irving has been in the news a bunch lately with his alleged desire to leave the Cleveland Cavaliers via trade, but his opinions are also making waves in an entirely different arena, middle school classrooms. NPR's Abby Wolfman-Arendt wrote a story this week about how teachers are battling the onslaught of fake news that is reaching their students and uses the example of middle school teacher Nick Grewal, who says that his students think the earth is flat because Irving said so on a podcast. And immediately I start to panic. How have I failed these kids so badly that they think the earth is flat just because a basketball player says it? He says he tried reasoning with the students and showed them a video. Nothing worked. They think that I'm part of this larger conspiracy of being a round earther. That's definitely hard for me because it feels like science isn't real to them. Now, here's the thing, man. And I've been saying this I've been saying this for quite some time, man. There's this attitude that like, yo, let folks believe what they want to believe and, you know, like just leave it alone. Like there's this laissez-faire kind of thing where like even basic fucking factual information can be seen as fake news or you spreading some sort or you're part, or what's your agenda, right? Like there's an agenda behind everything. It's like, no, man, some of these things are like basic fucking facts. And these are things that you would have thought that the whole flat earth thing would have been settled a long time ago, right? But because we got like people like Kyrie Irving coming out saying that he thinks the world is flat. And I believe who was that? B.O.B. The rapper B.O.B. And like Neil deGrasse Tyson actually came on, I believe it was maybe The Daily Show or some shit like that, and talked about the earth being flat. They did a diss record. We did the whole we talked about this a whole hell of a lot, I think, on like maybe a year ago on the Span Report. And so, like, you got this whole thing where, like, people can get factual information and totally dismiss it because it is not what they believe, right? You see this a lot with Trump supporters, where, like, the actual news, like, Trump supporters don't believe anything about this Russia shit because Trump tells them it's phony. And everything that links up to the Russian investigation and everything else is just the Democrats who are mad that they lost this election last year. They're trying to delegitimize my vote. Well, really, it's like, nah, man, this shit is happening. Right? This shit is happening. And everybody who reports on it are part of the conspiracy. And so there's a lot of people who have gotten into these bunkers of, well, this is what I believe, and you're not changing my mind with these facts that you got. We believe in these alternate facts, and this is what I'm going to ride with. We got kids, middle school kids out here who really believe that the earth is flat because a basketball player said so. And because it's one of those things where high profile is important, right? High profile is important. And it's why I find like when I talk about, like, say, for instance, the Breakfast Club and the kinds of people that they have on and the endorsing of messages that are harmful to people. This is one of the things that I'm talking about, because high profile for a lot of people means more than the factual information. So if a high profile person says something, excuse me, never mind their credentials, never mind their level of expertise. If somebody values that high profile person's opinion on something, then they're going to run with that. And it's dangerous in the sense that sometimes these opinions get endorsed and it distorts people's sense of reality. Right. Here's an instance of that happening right now with these middle school kids. Right. It says, if you recall, Irving made his flat earth claims in February on a podcast hosted by Cavaliers teammates Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye, steering a discussion about whether aliens exist towards a more conceptual matters. The post, Jake Russell had the transcript. The earth is flat, Irving, who spent some time at Duke before entering the NBA draft, repeated three times. The fact that in our lifetimes that there have been so many holes and so many pockets in our history, history is history and it happened long before us and it's going to happen after us and it always repeats itself somehow in some way, Irving said. All these things that they keep giving us, all this information, I'm just saying that that these things that used to put me in fear, it makes you not want to question it naturally because of how much information you actually can figure out and how much information there actually is out there. It's crazy. Anything that you have a particular question on, okay, is the earth round, flat or round, I think you need to do research on it. The fact is right in front of our faces. I'm telling you, it's right in front of our faces. They lie to us, right? So there's this thing, man. Like, remember there used to be the crazy motherfucker on the block who used to say a whole lot of crazy shit, and people would ignore him because they knew what the fuck he was saying was crazy? Like, the crazy dude has found legitimacy on YouTube. The crazy dude has found legitimacy on podcasts. The crazy dude has found legitimacy on social media. The crazy dude isn't relegated to just being a crazy motherfucker in the neighborhood. He can find other crazy motherfuckers to get behind whatever the fuck it is he's got going on, and they're going to ride that shit out till the wheels fall off. And to some degree, that shit is leaking out into, you know, larger society where, like, where settled things, like scientifically settled facts are being just straight up being discounted because someone of high profile says, nah, I don't believe that shit. It's the same way that, like, Republicans can talk about, like, they don't believe climate change is a real thing or global warming is a real thing because, yo, it snowed over here in the winter. Like, I thought they said the earth was warming up. Right? Despite the fact that we've been having, like, record high temperatures and our summers have been incrementally higher than they have been in recent years. Or that you see, species being totally wiped off the face of the earth. That you see ice shelves being, like, totally breaking away from, you know, from other parts of the Antarctic and in Antarctica and the North Pole, what have you. Like, all these ice shelves breaking off. Like, they totally don't believe that this is a real thing. They deny what 90% of the scientists are telling them. And they have no level of expertise in this. Like, we are ignoring the level of expertise of the people who are paid to study this shit, right? And say that they are part of an agenda, a part of an agenda to make us think a certain way and all these other things, man. It's crazy in the ways in which we ignore the factual information because someone of high profile decides that this is something that we're not going to rock with. It's crazy how that happens, man. So, yeah, that was... What in blue blazes, man?
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
This nigga just say blue blazes.
All right. So, speaking of high profile motherfuckers, this brings us to our, like, topic of the day, right? So, I call this episode Equivocating Like a Motherfucker, right? And you guys may, you know where this line comes from. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can pull this up. If you, any of you guys are Wire fans, man, you know exactly where this comes from. Let me go ahead and do this here. Do-do-do. Whoops. All right. Now, there was this part of The Wire, season one, where Bubbles was trying to school this other drug addict on how to move in the neighborhood and hustle and kind of scheme their way into, you know, getting drugs, right? He was trying to school this kid on the game, so to speak. And so he would like this new drug dude, like he wasn't really taking heed to what Bubbles was telling him. And he was, you know, kind of like fucking up. And Bubbles had to talk to him about the way in which he was thinking. So check this out.
I mean, no offense, son, but that's some weak ass thinking. You equivocating like a motherfucker.
Now, take note of what Bubbles said, man. He said that was some weak ass thinking. All right. Here's a drug addict telling another drug addict about weak ass thinking and equivocating. And the reason that I said, you know, I'm bringing this up, man, is because I've been seeing a lot of equivocating and weak ass thinking going on when it concerns these stories that we've been seeing about R. Kelly, Usher, Bill Cosby. It's like a pattern, right? And the pattern is, but what about, right? But what about? It's like it's gotten to a point where, like, niggas were kind of, but what, like, they were, but what about racism? Everything, right? Now, here's the thing. If you listen to this show for any length of time, you know I talk about racial inequality quite often here on this show. I don't think I have to explain that to anybody who've listened to me for any length of time. Like, yo, when I see racial injustice, I think, like, yo, that's fucked up, and I bring attention to it, I speak on it, and that's just kind of one of my things, right? But when it comes to black celebrities getting caught up into some bullshit, there's this misguided level of racial solidarity that happens that is a little bit disheartening. It's a little bit disappointing because I feel like that unity, that particular kind of racial unity, is a bit misplaced, right? So one of the reasons why I bring this up is one of my partners, man, one of my best friends, we were talking, and like he brought this video to my attention, right? And this video is basically Ed Lover talking about the R. Kelly situation. And the reason, like, he's talking about this R. Kelly situation, and he's bringing up Hugh Hefner, and he's talking about black people being hypocrites, being hypocritical in their contempt for R. Kelly, but not being hypocritical or not having contempt for Hugh Hefner. So I'm going to play a little bit. I'm going to play some of this video, and I want you guys to kind of like listen to what he had to say. So check this out.
Can we? Sometimes I get into it and I talk about this social media driven society that we're living in. And everything is social media. You can't communicate with somebody because their face is down in their phone. But lately it seems that we as black people jump on any story that anybody prints that says something about somebody else, and we tend to treat our own people worse than we treat white people. Give you a classic example. Let's talk about this R. Kelly shit for a minute.
All right.
Okay, so R. Kelly has been accused of operating a sex cult that he has women living with him. He won't let them leave. He's holding them against their will, even though women have come out and said that R. Kelly ain't holding me against my will. I like it. I want to be here. I want to be around with R. Kelly. Why are we treating R. Kelly worse than we treat Hugh Hefner? And he's been doing the same shit.
My question is, what's going on in there? Like, why are they okay with what's going on in there? Like, what are they doing in there? What, like, what's going on?
With the women?
Yeah.
Is it the same mentality that pimps have? It's easy for a pimp to get a woman to sell their body that has low self-esteem. Is R. Kelly and Hugh Hefner catching women who have low self-esteem? And because everybody's attracted to this glamorous life. If you got a broken down Nissan sitting in front of your house or no car at all, and you're on the Marta and you living in this place and it's a dangerous neighborhood and it's a shitty existence and circumstance, somebody come along that lives in a mansion, that lets you live in a mansion and jump in the back of a Maybach with them or drop top Bentley or a Sprinter van, that's attractive to you compared to the life that you already live, and giving you nice clothes.
Got it.
And letting you eating gourmet food. You're going to places you've never experienced before. Maybe sometimes you're even flying on a private jet. Mm-hmm. You've never been on a private jet before. Is that wrong?
Yeah, it's wrong. Especially if you're taking advantage of people. Right? Especially if you're taking advantage of people. So here's the thing, man. One of the things that Ed Lover said was like, yo, we're more critical of our own than we are people like Hugh Hefner. Right? And he talked about like, yo, whether or not these girls are choosing to be with R. Kelly and the benefits of being with someone like R. Kelly or Hugh Hefner or what have you. Right? And one of the things that like, it was weird. It was kind of weird to see how in lockstep this whole thing with Hugh Hefner. Everybody started comparing him to Hugh Hefner. It was like it spread like wildfire. This whole talking point spread like wildfire. It was like all of a sudden niggas got into their whole little thing. Like, okay, yeah, we're going to ride with this Hugh Hefner thing. We're going to compare him to Hugh Hefner. And it starts becoming a pattern. When it came to this shit with R. Kelly, people start talking about Hugh Hefner. When it came to Usher giving or being sued for exposing women to herpes, it became a comparison between Charlie Sheen and Charlie Sheen exposing women to HIV. When it became a thing for Bill Cosby and the 50 some odd women who had accused Bill Cosby of taking advantage of them sexually while after drugging them, it became of, well, what about Stephen Collins, the father, the guy who played the father on the show Seventh Heaven? Right? For every fucking story of black dudes, black celebrity dudes who have means, who have influence, who have power, for every instance of these, there was this, but what about instances? What about Stephen Collins? What about Roman Polanski? What about Elvis Presley? What about Hugh Hefner? And the thing that's like frustrating for me and frustrating for a lot of folks is that at some point, man, like, y'all niggas got to stop pretending that y'all ever gave a fuck about these white people. Like, real talk, y'all niggas got to stop fucking pretending this shit. Like, understand this. When people within the black community start talking about R. Kelly or start talking about Usher or start talking about Bill Cosby, there's the reason we're talking about them is because these people are relevant to us. We watch their shows. We listen to their music. We see them in movies. We pay attention to these people. Most of y'all don't even know what the fuck Charlie Sheen is doing right now. I can't tell you how many of y'all probably never even bought a Playboy right now. Some of you may have never seen a Woody Allen film or a Roman Polanski film and couldn't name them if you did see one. Some of y'all never watched Seventh Heaven. Y'all don't fucking care about these white folks. Y'all don't. The only time the names of these white folks even come up is when a nigga done got caught up doing something stupid. So I saw, like, earlier this week, man, I was in, you know, I have conversations with people on social media and what have you. And like this talking point start coming up. Well, you know, but what about Charlie Sheen in relation to Usher, right? I saw a woman talk about, yo, I feel sorry for Usher, not because he has herpes, but because he's being dragged across the coals for this. But I didn't see nobody talking about Charlie Sheen exposing, you know, women to HIV. When a simple Google search will show you that People Magazine was talking about it, Metro was talking about it, the Daily Mail was talking about it. You didn't see the shit because you wasn't looking for the shit. And why wasn't you looking for the shit? Because they not fucking relevant to our community, man. This shit happened with Charlie Sheen. Like, he just got sued last month for exposing a woman to HIV. Why weren't we talking about it? Because he's not relevant to our community. We don't give a fuck about Charlie Sheen. Y'all, I bet you Hugh Hefner right now, like, man, why my name getting drugged through this shit? I didn't do nothing just now. Y'all don't care about what's going on with these white folks. The only time that these people's names even come up is when y'all want to try to deflect from what the fuck these dudes is doing. And it's fucked up because, one, it absolves them for what the fuck it is they're accused of doing. You thinking that by somehow comparing these dudes to their white counterparts who are also doing some fucked up shit, that somehow excuses what the fuck they're doing. And it doesn't. It's still fucked up. I don't know any black people who are out here defending Hugh Hefner. I don't know any black people who are out here defending Charlie Sheen. I don't know any black people who are out here defending Stephen Collins, Roman Polanski, Woody Allen, Elvis Presley. I don't know any black people who are out here defending the actions of these dudes. So the fact that when we talk about the actions of a Usher or a Bill Cosby or of a R. Kelly, that somehow we can't say anything about them because we didn't say anything about Hugh Hefner or Woody Allen, like we ever gave a fuck about them ever to begin with. It's stupid. It's weak ass thinking. And it gets to a point, man, like, you know, I talk about injustices. I talk about, inequalities, man, like the ways in which the world is systemically set up against black folks, man, and how it's set up to like make us like to fuck us up, man. I talk about this shit on the show all the time. But then when shit like this happens, well, we know the people in our communities who ain't shit. And yet we feel like we're compelled to defend them simply because they're black, when we know they ain't shit. Right? And I get it. Like, the system has, you know, has done countless things against us that will make you, suspect of, you know, the system and how it mets out justice and whatever else. And, you know, the thing about it for me is that, like, yo, we can, as a community, hold each other accountable. There's nothing wrong in that. and holding each other accountable for when we fuck up, and when the victims of our crimes are also people who look like us, who look like our cousins, who look like our daughters, who look like our moms, our aunts, our grandmothers. Because truth be told, with people like R. Kelly, especially with R. Kelly, like if R. Kelly was out here fucking around with underage white girls, R. Kelly would be up under the fucking jail at this point. Let's not fool ourselves. The fact that R. Kelly has been able to operate with impunity while preying on young black women and girls has a lot to do with the fact that R. Kelly is still free right now. Because we tend to like low key, we minimize the level of victimhood that these women are going through, right? We try to make it out like it's their fault. Like, yeah, they want to be there. Like even Ed Lover, he said, yeah, they want to be there. They living in a lap of luxury. They in Maybachs. They living in fancy homes, and they doing all these things as if that somehow excuses what the fuck is going on. As if that excuses it. I'll never understand this warped sense of racial solidarity for the predators within our community. Right? I'll never get it. Now, like the young lady was talking about, like it was a young lady talking about, like she feels sorry for Usher. Like, why? Why are you feeling sorry for Usher? Usher took those women's choice away from them on whether or not they would want to fuck with him or not. Why are you feeling sorry for him? It makes no sense. And the reason why, you know, they're saying they're feeling sorry for him is like because of Charlie Sheen. Like, yo, as if Charlie Sheen hasn't been sued and it hasn't been talked about. I'm pretty sure white folks probably having their conversations with themselves about this shit. We're not privy to it, or we're not paying attention to it, because guess what? We don't care. And with unfortunately, when it comes to, you know, the victims of R. Kelly, like, we don't care. He picked the right ones. We don't care. Where young black girls are being called thots for pursuing dreams that they think R. Kelly may be able to fulfill musically, where we ignore the history that R. Kelly has with having inappropriate sexual relationships with young girls, where he's married a 15-year-old Aaliyah, where we turn a blind eye and say, well, these white folks are getting away with this, so we should be able to get away with that. It's like, oh, why are we comparing ourselves, and why do we aspire to be the worst of white people? At what point do we as black people, who, especially if we talk about having the moral high ground, why in the fuck would we want to be the worst with the worst of them? Why are we protecting the worst of that? That's not equality, man. So you look at a story like R. Kelly and you compare him to Hugh Hefner. You look at a story like Bill Cosby and you compare him to Stephen Collins. And you look at a story like Usher and you compare him to Charlie Sheen. And you equivocating like a motherfucker, man. And it's weak ass thinking. What about us, man? What about us? Because ultimately, this ain't got shit to do with white folks. This here is about us. This here is something that we can control. This here is something that we can do something about. Whether that be with our money, whether that be with our attention and our eyeballs, we can't stop allowing these sort of these dudes to operate within the community with impunity. We could do that if we cared. A lot of us don't, though. And it's that is so disheartening, that is so disappointing, that is like. And like I said, I was having a conversation with my homie and I was just disappointed. Because I know this dude. I know this dude. I know it's a whole lot of, like, I know, like, and it's funny, man. Like, when you try to make this shit personal for folks, man, Here's the weird thing. Like, you make this personal to people. You'd be like, yo, man, like, if this was happening, if like, he even talked about pimping. Ed Lover was talking about pimping. Like, if a dude was trying to pimp on your daughter, or if a dude was trying to pimp on your niece or your mom or whatever else, would you be okay with that? And most motherfuckers will say no. Most sane dudes will say, nah, man, fuck that. I'll beat his ass, yada, yada, yada. They'll talk about all these things they'll do to this person for trying to take advantage of the person that they love, for trying to take advantage of the person within their family, right? They'll talk all this shit about what they will not tolerate from another dude when it comes to the women and the girls in their family. And yet somehow that stops when it comes to other women and girls within the community. We don't care. It stops with ours. That's where we've gotten as a community, where it stops with us. Where suddenly it's okay so long as it's not happening to somebody that I don't know. That's the disheartening thing to me. Is that, why does it stop there? Why are we cool with it happening at all? Yeah, this is how things have been, but why do we continue to let them be that way? Why are we cool with that? Couldn't we help facilitate a community where it's not that way anymore? We could. We could if we wanted to. And unfortunately, man, it's a whole lot of motherfuckers that just simply don't want to. And sometimes it's about, you know, not being in a place to understand, right? Because again, sometimes it's about, you know, not being aware or not being privy to certain information and not, you know, not really paying attention to some of the things that are going on like this. Like, people, you know, again, people are living in lies, man. But at some point, man, there's got to be some sort of integrity. There's got to be some sort of will to not just roll with the status quo because it's easy. To not just be like, well, shit, this is how it's always been. Especially if you know it's wrong. If you know it's wrong, why then continue to participate in it once you know it's wrong? And a fucked up part about it is, yeah, we know pimping is wrong. And we know, like, taking advantage of young girls is wrong. Most dudes know this. 90% of dudes know this. It's why you see prom videos where, like, dudes talking about, hey, you got, like, you seen, like, the whole thing with, you know, the guys with the guns on his daughter's prom date and stuff like that. Like, you better take care of my daughter. You better not try nothing funny or I'm going to fuck you up. Or if a dude is out with his woman, the dudes would probably say something to this woman if she was out by herself. But because she's under the covering of a man and a man is with her, then all of a sudden they're not going to say nothing. They'll probably look, but they're not going to say nothing. Dudes understand that other dudes ain't shit. It's why it's always so funny, like, to hear dudes get pissed off about women saying that men are trash. I'm like, yo, real talk, 90% of y'all niggas know it's true. That's why these niggas get so mad, because they know it's true. We know this. As dudes, we talk about this shit amongst each other. We know other dudes ain't shit. We know it. But this whole equivocating thing, where because these white dudes is doing this shit, therefore these black dudes should also be able to get away with doing this shit. Yeah, that's some weak ass thinking, man. All of them really should be locked up. All of them are being able to get away with this shit because they got means and they got money and they got influence. But all of them should be locked up in much the same way that your ass would be if you were caught doing the exact same shit that they were. And yet here you are finding yourself defending these motherfuckers because he's black. That's the kind of black solidarity we can kind of do without. Will we protect the predators within our communities at the expense of the victims who also look exactly like us? Some weak ass thinking. And y'all equivocating like a motherfucker. So yeah, man. That was what was on my mind this week, man. Like, just kind of seeing this entire thing kind of play out, especially with this R. Kelly shit, seeing how this thing played out and watching people just go like go through the mental gymnastics of defending these dudes and coming up with reasons why what they might have been doing was okay because there was a white dude who maybe got away with it, as if it makes it all right. And it ain't. It really ain't. But yeah, man. So that's what's going on. But before we get into our ass hat of the week, we do have some listener feedback to get to. So let me see if I can pull this up. Where is it? See if we can pull up our voicemails here. Nope, not that one. And not that one either. Okay. Let's see if we can go about this another way. Let's go to this here. Whoops. Okay. So I think this call came from overseas. And we're going to play this call here now. So check this out.
Good morning, Mr. Span. I'm a UK listener. I've been listening to your podcasts, more specifically the last two. What I'm calling in regards on is the Span Response episode or podcast. I can see where both parties, the person who kind of took up a bit too much time, you given the lilac chair, as you put,
yeah,
and yourself. But I can understand where both parties are actually on the same page, but I expressed it in different ways. The person, you was addressing, they were definitely passionate, but they just wasn't able to convey in a way where it was palatable for you, or something where you could maybe, diagnose or defragment to make more sense into what the person was trying to explain. However, the person more spoke to you or messaged you in more of a combative sense as opposed to maybe become collaborative sense. The sort of things, that you expressed in the podcast in regards to Dr. Umar Johnson and Boris Hopkins and the way they're going about how they're trying to campaign to for the movement of black people, and Dr. Umar Johnson, where he's trying to fund his own school. I can hear from, what you say, and the information that you provide on the podcast, you don't really fully agree with the methods that they're taking. But at the same time, this is the problem and the downfall with the black communities in the UK and obviously the US and some other countries. These sort of conversations should be taken they should be behind closed doors with certain groups, members, such as yourselves, Black Guy Who Tips, Dr. Umar Johnson, Boyce Watkins, and any other representatives of the black community who want to actually do something positive. The issue that I believe that person you was addressing in the previous podcast was the fact that he felt or you came across as if you was more or less going for the jugular of all these people who are expressing that they want to be the representatives for the black community in the US and other countries. I feel maybe you should take a more gentler approach or more softer approach in regards to how you're addressing certain things. And again, this is...
Okay, it sounds like you may have gotten cut off. And he did leave another voicemail, but I do want to respond to a couple things that he said there. one of the biggest things with Curtis, who the Span Response episode was about, one of the things that like really kind of pissed me off and kind of set me off with that was the fact that he called my integrity into question. and he alluded to or tried to say basically that I was making shit up about these guys that I was talking about. When I would bring in the things that, when I would bring in examples of why I came to the conclusions about these dudes that I did, I don't have to make up anything on this show. One of the biggest things about this show is that when you hear me on the mic and when I say things on this mic, I'm not saying anything that I don't believe in, and I don't have to bullshit anybody on this mic. And that was one of the things that I thought was crossing the line as far as the feedback was going there. Another thing that kind of led to him being kicked out of the Span Report group, and I initially wasn't going to even do that. Another thing was he got into it with one of the female members of the Span Report group and started attacking the group as if it was an echo chamber for me, right? Where he looked at the Span Report group as a matter of fact, I think I took a screenshot of it, but he basically said something about he wanted the group to, like, the group should grow to where it's not just people who just agree with the host, and it's not just an echo chamber for the host, but where we can have debates and we can have, you know, we could disagree and all these other things. Now, I want this to be clear. Was the reason for the Span Report group was so that listeners of the Span Report can congregate amongst each other and talk about things that even happen on the show, or even just talk about things amongst each other. But to come into the group for people who listen to the show and attack the host of the show and think that that was going to be met with fucking like hugs and kisses and shit was a little, it wasn't exactly the smartest thing in the world, right? So I do fault myself in a sense of, yeah, I gave that shit way too much profile, right? It should not have gotten an entire fucking episode. It should not have gotten even like that close. I felt like I played myself in like kind of like posting all of his comments and in a way to like kind of, you know, reassure people that this is something that that my integrity shouldn't be in question, right? I felt like I played myself in the sense that I gave him way much more fucking attention than he should have gotten. And so for that, and to my listeners, I apologize. The second thing is, as far as the conversations go about, you know, with the black community and, you know, the conversations happening behind closed doors, like, understand this. Like, yeah, there, even within the black community, like, of course, like this gets said a lot, that we aren't all a monolithic group of people, that, you know, there are different ways and different paths, and people take those different ways and different paths to what they think will lead to a better footing for black people on a global scale, not just here in America, but even in the UK or around the world. People have, you know, their own understandings. They have their own philosophies on what they think should be one of the, you know, the leading way in which we go forward. My problem with, you know, the Umar Johnsons of the world is that I feel like they're taking advantage of people who aren't learned enough to look into the things that Umar Johnson is saying. And I think Umar Johnson is a snake oil salesman who is benefiting from people's want to have a better America for black folks. So he's using it as a way to enrich himself, not so much for the enrichment of black people, but as a way to enrich himself, which is why I still say he's a professional fundraiser. That school may never become a thing. And that is like the biggest thing with Umar Johnson. So as far as like these conversations happening on a like out in the open, as we do on podcasts and as we do on like YouTube and what have you, like, understand that this kind of goes into like maybe even the history of black people and our discussions about the advancement of black people. Like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. very publicly disagree with each other at points during the civil rights movement. W.E.B. Du Bois and the Booker T. Washington. I don't know why I was drawing a blank there, but W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington very publicly disagree with one another as to what the method of advancement for black people was to take hold, how that advancement was to take hold here in America. So I think it's kind of ingrained in the discussion. It's kind of ingrained in the method of how we advance as a people, where we do talk about these things publicly. These things aren't going to always happen behind closed doors. And I think that's just kind of the reality of where we are. You know what I mean? Like, chances are I'll probably never be in a room with Umar Johnson. I'll probably never be in a room with someone like, say, a Sairaa Suttenseddie, even though Sairaa Suttenseddie lives here in Detroit. Like, I'll probably never be in a room with these guys. And part of that is by design, because I don't agree with anything they say. I don't endorse their message. And I think what they're promoting is fucked up. So, yeah, man, I get what you're saying. But, yeah, I don't know or think that these conversations happening behind closed doors with like black leaders and stuff like that, I don't think that's going to happen. There's always going to be some sort of public disagreement with how we do things, how we're advancing in the world. And when it comes to those guys, when it comes to them, I don't believe that they are actually for the advancement of black people. I really do believe that they're for the advancement of themselves. And because of that, I tend to kind of call a lot of the shit that they say into question publicly. So there was another part. He like I said, he probably got cut off, so he called back again, and let's listen to that.
This sort of thing, as I said already in the previous voice call, should definitely be taken behind closed doors. And even if there may not be something that everybody collectively agrees with, at least maybe that the people who are voicing their opinions about these situations or what the current representatives are trying to do, at least maybe take a more softer approach, or at least give the benefit of the doubt and discuss it in a more balanced way, as opposed to I don't agree with that, or that doesn't seem accurate, or it's not 100%, or any facts. To an extent, yeah, I would agree where, yeah, you would need this information to probably make a more balanced or more accurate, you know, opinion or have a stance on what these people are trying to do. But in the same breath, they are making a start. They are trying. Whether it seems bogus or disingenuous or not that up to par, they are trying to make a start. So as opposed to everybody trying to tear them down, and I'm not saying that you are, but as opposed to the going for the jugular approach with everyone going back and forth, let's take a step back, hear what people are actually saying, and then make an internal judgment call on what people are trying to say and how these representatives are trying to work, and then say, okay, well, that might not work, however, this is the way we should approach it, or this is the way I believe we could approach it collectively. This would be a smarter approach. And in other communities, this is the way things are done. So, again, it's just my opinion, but, you know.
All right. I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate you listening. I don't think you left a name, so I don't really, I can't, like, call you out by name, but I appreciate you calling. Here's the thing, though. I guess where we would probably disagree is whether or not they are, like, you know, I know you said they're trying to make a way. And unfortunately, they're trying to make a way, maybe it taking advantage of people of color, the people whom they claim to be advocating for. And that primarily is my issue with a lot of these guys. We listen to Umar Johnson denigrate black people for not giving him money while at the same time needing these black people to give him money. We've listened to Umar Johnson and like, shit. We can even talk about Dr. Boyce Watkins. We've listened to these guys like kind of put down a certain segment of the community. So like, say, for instance, with Boyce Watkins, one of the issues that I always had with him, despite the financial advice that he may give, was that he kind of buys into the whole respectability thing where, you know, we got to present ourselves a certain way. And, you know, black people, we have to do this so that white people will respect us, when we've been shown through history time and again that even when we act in the ways in which white people will supposedly accept us, that it hasn't always saved us, and we are still treated to the boot of the fucking white man. Right. So, my critiques of these dudes aren't like, I wouldn't say my critiques of these dudes are like kind of like flash in the pan. Like I've kind of watched these dudes operate for a while. You know what I'm saying? Like I watch videos of them. I've listened to them for some length of time. Like I didn't come up with, you know, with these particular issues with them in a flash. Like this has happened over the course of a few years. And so I guess the thing with them is I don't believe them when they say they're for the advancement of black people, when they exclude other black people within that advancement, when they exclude the people whom they think are deemed uncouth or unworthy of being treated as human beings, when they think that a certain segment of the population, be that our LGBTQ community, should be converted, or that there's something wrong with them, and that was never a part of the black community when we know that it was. Like when I listen to them say these, when they perpetuate these messages, it just further marginalizes other groups of people within our community, and it doesn't advance us in any real way. So, yeah, could I be a little bit more softer in the approach in which I kind of take those dudes, like, you know, when I talk about them? Maybe. Right? But I think that if we're going to talk about the advancement of black people, then we need to be talking about the advancement of all black people. And if you're not talking about the advancement of all black people, then you should probably step aside and stop pretending that you speak for all of black people. Because you don't. And that has been my biggest critique of all of these dudes, whether that be Tariq Nasheed, whether that be Boyce Watkins, whether that be Sara Sunseti, whether that be Umar Johnson, like everybody who's a part of that special HOTEP unit, Wesley Muhammad, like all of those people in the special HOTEP unit. Like, this is the thing. Like, there's a lot of far intellectual nationalist thinking going on with those dudes. It is like when it's not a purity test. It's not so much a purity test, but it's one of those things where like, yo, man, we got to stop giving charlatans the audience that they, you know, that they crave, so to speak. And some of these dudes, like, they've been given these audiences, and it further it makes it difficult for the marginalized people, even be like, even what you would consider or what some would consider below black people, marginalizes them even further. And to a certain degree, it's almost like white black dudes trying to obtain positions of power that white dudes have, and once they get there, nothing else is going to change except for the color and the face of the people who are doing the oppressing. And I don't want to be a black person or a black man who, like, if, say, for instance, if the revolution happened and, like, and this isn't going to happen, but say, for instance, if the revolution happened and black people all of a sudden got the power that white folks have, or like, or whatever the fuck, and now we're in charge, I don't want to therefore then turn into the very fucking thing that I disparaged on the way up. And sometimes, like, when you listen to these dudes, that's what you get. You can hear it in the messaging already that they would continue the exact same way. The only difference would be is they're the ones in charge. So, yeah, man, that's pretty much where I'm at with it when it comes to these guys, man. So, again, man, you didn't leave a name, but I do appreciate you calling. And I do hope to hear from you again soon, man. Appreciate you. It seems like you call from overseas, man. So I appreciate you taking up. It probably cost you some money to call here, man. So, yeah, man, I do appreciate you calling. And I hope to hear from you again soon, brother. Real talk. But, yeah, that was the listener feedback for the show. So before we get out of here, of course, we got to go into our ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And today's ass hat of the week is the Breakfast Club and Lil Duval, right? So we've been talking a little bit about marginalized people, marginalized groups of people, and the platforms that they've been given. I spoke about the Breakfast Club a couple of weeks ago when I talked about, you know, them having people like a Umar Johnson and like a Wesley Muhammad on their show, and some of the messaging that Umar Johnson and Wesley Muhammad and what have you would bring to a show of that higher platform and that higher profile, and legitimizing the messages that these guys have been, you know, known to propagate, right? So The reason that we're talking about Lil Duval and The Breakfast Club is because they, for whatever reason, decided that it was okay to joke about the killing of transgender people. So, let's see here. Let me see where I want to start this video at. I think it's about here. Yeah, the interesting thing about this is, like, again, like I said, is very important that, like, we don't endorse and we don't give platforms to dangerous speech and dangerous fucking lines of thinking. And I know that may sound like it's censorship and all this other shit. I hear all of that. But when we minimize this sort of, like, when we try to, like, make this sort of thing small, it makes it okay for a group of people to further suffer when they shouldn't have to, right? And so here's The Breakfast Club with Lil Duval. Ironically, they're talking about transgender people right after having activist Janet Mock on the show to promote a book. And now they got Lil Duval talking shit on their show. Check this out.
In that hole. Nope. No, I don't know. I mean, shout out to my sister, my gay ass sister. She doing her thing.
She part of the LGBT.
Yeah, she part of the LGBT. She the first person that texted me about that. Did you see that?
Wait a second.
Did he give him $1 million?
Wait a second. Let me set this up right. Here's the thing. They actually had Lil Duval on the show to talk about Donald Trump banning transgender people from the military. Now, I don't know why they thought that Lil Duval would be the person to ask about transgender people being disallowed or banned from military service. But they decided that this was the time to ask anybody about this particular situation. So you knew you was going to get some foolishness, but this is what happened on the show. Check this out. I'm sorry. I had to reset that.
Yeah.
Too far.
Yeah. Imagine a question. How do you feel about President Trump's take on banning transgenders from being a part of our military?
Man, don't be asking me nothing like that. You ain't finna put me in that hole. Nope. No, I don't know. I mean, shout out to my sister, my gay ass sister. She doing her thing.
She part of the LGBT.
Yeah, she part of the LGBT. She the first person that texted me about that. Did you see that? And I had to fake like I cared. Be like, oh, that's crazy.
But what do you think about transgender people being in the military?
I'm just doing my thing, man. Did I tell you I'll be at Carolina this weekend? I'm just doing my thing. Shout out to all the trainees out there.
Now, they all, like, laughing it up. They think this shit is funny. Like, they all laughing it the fuck up. Like, everything is good.
You can't say that.
That's crazy.
Transgenders,
oh, transgenders.
So say you met a girl, and she didn't tell you she was a transgender.
That ain't a girl. I met a boy. That means I met a boy.
After 4 months, she told you I had sex, and then after...
We're not having sex. Yes,
after 4 months, y'all had sex, and she said, Duval...
This might sound messed up, and I don't care. She dying. I can't deal with that.
No, that's a hate crime.
I can't do that. No, dog, you manipulated me to believe in this thing. My mind, I'm gay now.
I do think
I'm gay.
No, you're not.
So now they've gone into a scenario where they present a transgender person as being a manipulative, conniving, sneaky person, right? And this kind of goes into the whole idea of why people don't necessarily like transgender people, is that we have this idea of them being deceitful people, that they're not just like trying to live out their life as they see themselves to be, that they're somehow trying to get something over on us, right? DJ Envy sets up the scenario like, yeah, you meet a transgender person. They didn't tell you that they used to be a boy or whatever, and y'all have sex and whatnot. And Lil Duval is like, no, we not having sex. I ain't meet no boy. I ain't met no girl. I met a boy. You know, all this other things, like misgendering and all these other things. Like, they're laughing it up. Like they think all of this shit is funny. He says that he would kill this person because now this somehow makes him gay. That's not, you know what?
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
It's this level of ignorance that gets put out on shows like The Breakfast Club. And it's this level of... It's the endorsement of a show like this that kind of permeates through our communities, right? Kind of permeates through our communities where we think that these sorts of attitudes are all right. This is normalized. But I'll let this go for a little while longer.
I'm gay.
It happened to Richard Pryor. He's cool with that.
He was cool with that. He said he sucked dick.
You couldn't come up with a good joke?
No. I can't live with that, bro. I can't.
Man.
I can't live with that. Just don't do me.
This will never happen.
So you don't have to worry about me killing nobody.
You've never been in a situation.
What the fuck am I being in a situation like that for?
Now, I do agree.
Hell no.
Sometimes you can't tell.
I do agree that you are taking away a person's power of choice.
Yeah.
When you don't tell them up front. That's why when Janet Mock was there, she said she tells.
There should be some type of repercussions for that if you do that to somebody.
You should go to jail or something.
Something.
Some charges be pressed.
So until then, I'm gonna have my own repercussions. So.
When Janet Mock was there, she said she tells all her partners. She didn't tell the first one.
Who?
Janet Mock.
Who is that?
Transgender activist.
Oh,
beautiful,
I didn't know that.
Beautiful person.
Okay.
But you can't go around killing transgenders.
I'm not gonna kill transgenders. I didn't say. See, here you go trying to flip my words. I didn't say I'm gonna kill transgenders. I said if one did that to me,
if you had sex with one and then they didn't,
and they didn't tell me, I'm gonna be so mad. I'm probably gonna want to kill them.
Well, all right. Let's not even ask him that because until it happens to him, he doesn't know what he might do.
Yeah,
it might already happen to you.
All right, put that damn. But, I mean,
tell me she ain't pretty. Come on, now.
She's beautiful.
That nigga doing his thing.
Oh,
he's doing his thing.
And it's all a joke. Everything's all a motherfucking joke to them.
That's so crazy.
You ain't nothing to get me.
Why you trying to get...
They done got you.
Yeah. Shout out Janet.
Well, listen, you might have already slept with one and don't know.
No, I didn't.
You're in Atlanta now.
I try to mess with girls that got babies, so I know for sure.
They might have adopted and told you.
Yeah, they still got stretch marks and C-sections and stuff like that.
Yo, I love when Duvall's up here.
I'm just up here chilling, man.
And Emmy's like, yo, I love when Duvall is here. See, this is the thing, man. Like, what I've been talking about lately has been like these endorsements of these problematic, these fucked up ass messages that further marginalize groups of people. And this point right now, they're talking about Janet Mock. Janet Mock is a transgender activist. Janet Mock is a woman of color. They've already misgendered this person numerous times. They're laughing and joking. This is after they've had Janet Mock on the show. So, like, yeah, man, like, there's a hashtag going on right now, like, boycott the Breakfast Club. Like, you know, I support it, but it's, you know, it's like one of those things. Like, I wasn't never really a listener of their show like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, you know, tune in when they live and no shit like that. Every now and again, I might catch an interview. But, yeah, this is some bullshit. And it's dangerous for them to continue to have problematic ass people come up on their show and spew this kind of bullshit and think that it's okay. It's not. Especially when we're talking about the advancement of black people, especially when we're talking about the advancement of people in like marginalized people. As a person of color, man, as a black man, as a person of color, how can I look myself in the fucking mirror when I know what discrimination and marginalization looks like, and then therefore go ahead and do it to somebody else? I can't do it. So, yeah. The Breakfast Club and Lil Duval earned their motherfucking spot as the ass hat of the week this week here at the Spare Report.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here.
All right, today's champ of the week this week here at the Spare Report Podcast is, you guys may not know these names, but you may know these names. It's, Devin and Brahim Fowler, man. Now, the reason why they are the champ of the week this week here at the Spare Report is you may have heard of them before. Last year, there was a story about a young man. He was a baseball player, He got a baseball bat from his dad for his birthday as a surprise, and he broke down and cried, and his father broke down and cried, and they shared a moment, man. They went on SportsCenter. It was like SportsCenter, like one of the top plays or something like that, man. They had them on ESPN and whatever else. And it was a real heartwarming story, man. Like, everybody's allergies was acting up, man. Like, yeah, you know, everybody shed a tear. It was a touching moment between a father and a son, right? And so, fast forward to this year, and Brahim Fowler actually hit a home run with that bat that his dad bought him, and his dad caught the home run ball. So we're going to play this story, man. Let me see if I can pull this video up so you guys can check this out for yourselves, man. This happened July 17th of 2017, man. Brahim Fowler up at the plate. He just took a ball. I can never be a play-by-play guy. One ball, no strikes. Comes the pitch.
I got it! Yeah!
His daddy caught the ball.
Yeah! I caught it, boo! I caught it, baby! Yeah! Way to go, boo! Nice home run, kid! Thank you! Thank you, boo! Yeah, boo!
Look at that.
Nice home run, kid! I caught it, too!
Look at that.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. That's also dope as shit, man. That's got my nigga, get your boy allergies acting up again, man. Real talk. Yeah, man, that's a beautiful story, man. Brahim and Devin Fowler. Again, sharing the father-son moment, and it going viral again, man, because of, you know, what we saw last year with Devin and Brahim, like sharing that moment as a father and son, sharing the love of the game of baseball, and being able to continue that. He caught his son's home run ball with the bat that he bought him last year, man. That's what's up. That's dope. And at a time when we talk about, you know, fatherhood examples, right? You know, especially when you talk about, let's like say for instance somebody like LeVar Ball or whatever else, and people propping that dude up as, you know, a symbolism of what black fatherhood should be. Like, yo, man, shout out to Devon Fowler for sharing in that moment with his son and celebrating his son, man. Real talk. So yeah, man, that has been the show, man. That's been episode 173. But before I get out of here, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spare Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard. Hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. I'll play them on the show. Respond in kind. You can also email me here at feedback@thespareandreport.com. That's feedback@thespareandreport.com. Leave me those emails. Of course, I'll read those emails here live on the show. Respond as well. Chop it up with me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. You can join the Span Report Facebook fan group on Facebook. Go on Facebook, look up the Span Report, hashtag TSRP the fam on Facebook, and become a part of the Facebook group, man, and chop it up with other listeners of the fam of the group. Listen to the show, talk about what's going on amongst yourselves, about the show, whatever else. Yo, man, do that. Go ahead and join the Facebook fan group on Facebook, man. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. Everything's available there. The podcasts are available there. Watch the show later on the website. Everything, man. Everything's available. It's 8:50. And Game of Thrones is about to come on. So I got to get out of here, y'all. But until next time, fam, peace.